I don't think they could have predicted or would have. I don't think in the first year of the Blacklist, they drew out a 10-year arc for the show.
Right.
I don't think they would have known this at that time.
Right.
So therefore, that's what I mean by, not giving. So to your point, I look at it as a script by script thing. And I think in law enforcement, in the reality of the job, it's a day by day thing. And in acting, it's a scene by scene thing.
Exactly.
A line by line thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got to be in the moment. By the way, I take it you're a Bulls fan. You grew up in the Midwest. You're a Bulls fan, right? Chicago Bulls.
Yeah. I root for the Bulls.
I'm a Celtics fan.
I don't know about this squad.
See, there you go.
That is veteran award-winning actor who's a co-star of The Blacklist in its 10th season, final season. I can't believe it's 10 years of that show. It's so good with James Spader as a star. And Harry is talking about the process of how over the years the storylines have developed and that you can't predict things. You just kind of, they go kind of, episode to episode, week to week, year to year, and about sort of staying present, staying in the moment, and just things evolving naturally. A really, really interesting conversation with him and a really fun conversation. The guy's really funny. He's a Chicago Bulls fan. I'm a Celtics fan, so I let him know that he's dead to me, but I still let him be on the show anyway. And no, we had a really great conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it. And then I've just had an anniversary and I spent it putting up a gate. We're trying to put up two gates for my wife. And then it didn't work out well. We had some issues. The gate's not up yet. I spent 12 hours in the heat. There was a lot of cutting and drilling and swearing, mainly swearing, a lot of swearing, a lot of, is to keep the dog that we have, Daisy, our dog, penned in. And so there was a lot of, swearing. And then like, why can't I just buy this at Home Depot? And why can't I? And then, so the fence will go up eventually. And then I will have a breakdown and they'll need two people to open the gates to wheel me out to an insane asylum after we're done with the gate. It's red cedar. It's better. The bugs don't get it, whatever. It's a lot. And then you got to have stainless steel hinges and I had to paint those. And that was a whole thing. And that's five coats of that. And they still nicked and I can see the silver. See, I'm already getting worked up. Why are you asking me about this? Anyway, I'll keep you posted on the fence saga. You guys also can see me doing stand-up this week. I'm going to be actually a lot in July. I'm going to be in New York City. Dates are on my website. I'm going to be at Stand Up New York, West Side Comedy Club, and a couple of other clubs in the city doing sets. So if you're in the city, come on out, check me out. You can go to my website to see dates. Enjoy Harry Lennox, and thank you so much for checking out the podcast. Hope you guys are enjoying it. It's a lot of fun for me. Here's Harry. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. My guest this week, a very accomplished actor in film, television, stage, has starred in films such as Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, the TV show Billions, the CW's Emily Owens, and is currently plays a terrific character, Harold Cooper, the assistant director of the FBI counterterrorism division in The Blacklist on NBC, which is in its 10th. And I'm kind of bummed final season because I love the show. It is great to have you on, Harry Lennox. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Paul. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. We were just talking off air that I work on The Late Show. You went to school with Stephen Colbert and, so we have that in common a little bit. So that's cool. So you're in your final episodes of the season and there's a lot going on. It's really kind of ratcheting up, if you will. You have this working relationship with Red before he became a criminal, but now there's sort of questions about where allegiances lies, moral crossroads issues. Talk a little bit about these final episodes, because what I've always loved about the show is that it lives in that gray area of like what is acceptable in terms of moral and ethical behavior to serve a greater good. And I like that as opposed to black and white, good guy versus bad guy, white hat, black hat. But expand on that a little bit into these last episodes, if you will.
Yes, well, I think I think that the great benefit of a character like Reddington gives a kind of charm. I mean, you don't know if he is a good or bad guy. I mean, he's beyond that in some way. He transcends any kind of immediate label on him because, as Spader himself put it, you know, is he a good guy that does bad things or a bad guy who does good things?
Right.
But I think, you know, to have that, to have the relationship, well, which is complicated, and which I think is the great appeal of the show. But I think that because of that, because of the nature of him and the relationship he has with the task force, which I lead, you know, people are always looking at that. It's off the books. Technically, it's a black site, the blacklist, you know, all of this kind of unseen aspect of what whoever put the term the deep state into existence. That's what it is. We represent, we're the deep state. We're covert ops. We're having effects in this kind. So that's fascinating, and people are going to be interested in that kind of thing. And when you got, you know, to your point, Paul, in terms of what makes it a little different, especially for a network show, is that relationship, and that there can be a really good reason, as we saw in real life, you know, for the last thousands of years, that sometimes allies get together who are not necessarily good people or don't approve of each other. You look at the, you know, Russia and the United States and all of these kind of relationships, North Korea, and you have it, what have you. I think that, that the idea is that alliances can form because nobody's fully good and nobody is fully evil. And I think that, you know, we accuse people of doing stuff all the time that we're doing as the United States.
Well, I got to tell you, that's a good point, Harry, but I do disagree because I'm only good all the time. There's no evil in me at all. I'm a choir boy, and you should know because you were raised Catholic, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But and by the way, I didn't ask you this, but Stephen Colbert, I heard he when you were in college together, I heard he would look over at your paper and cheat on tests. Is that true? I'm just trying to create some controversy here.
Well, I wouldn't know because I was looking over somebody else's shoulder.
Ah, there you go. That's the right answer. Look at you. You're like a politician. Did you guys, were you guys in acting class together? Did you do any like acting or improv work together when you were there?
I did not. You know, he was doing the Meow show. I don't know if he did while you. I certainly didn't do either one. I didn't really think I had any aptitude for improv. I later took some classes, but no, I didn't take any. I'm not aware that we took any performance classes together, Stephen and I doubt it. But yeah. I would see him around. He was a really nice guy, and you know, he was one of us, and you know, he was known to be funny.
Yeah,
there's some really, you know, funny guys there. So
yeah, he was one of them. It's a great program. Talking about the show some more. This you said, you know, for every villain, you need a hero. For every yin, you need a yang. And it's a codependent relationship between law enforcement and crime. As we just talked about, what would you, and that relationship is manifested in your relationship with James Spader's character. Would over time, would the two of you develop or have input in developing that relationship in your characters with the writers and the producers of the show?
Well, I certainly know he did. You know, he's extreme. You know, he was one of the executive producers in the, at least the last several seasons. I don't, not from the beginning, but certainly he's a very hands-on actor and lead actor. You know, the lead actor in a show that's carrying the show does have, I think, a good amount of input.
Yeah,
if they choose to.
Yeah,
and he's very meticulous in that way. I did not so much, nor did I. Nor did I care to. You know, Paul, it's very interesting. I think about, you know, the NBA today and how people can form teams and leave whenever they demand trades and to do all kinds of stuff. And NBA in Michael Jordan's time, and people talked about this in The Last Dance, he said he never asked for a trade or a player to be traded. He never asked for anything, really. He just would play the best that he could play all the time. And that's really the kind of attitude that I take into the industry. You know, if the writing is good, then it's good. If it wasn't good, I wouldn't have taken a job or something.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So that's the way I think of it. But I understand both sides.
So you also described sort of doing a series like this for this long. It's like peeling an onion. You're able to reveal layers more and more. And I know that those layers are there. You don't want to reveal too much too soon. Are you thinking, off season and over the summer, you're saying, okay, well, what's the next layer that I can go to with this character? Are you taking it script by script, week by week? And what do you mean that you don't want to reveal too much too soon?
Well, I think the writing staff change, circumstances in the world change over the course of 10 years. People are going to be interested in different things. So to become too entrenched in a morally or ethically or legally at least justifiable character, somebody that represents the order and the law, but that's bound to change. Our ideas about and relationships with others we interact with is going to. So that said, I think we know a fair amount about Cooper's personal life, right?
Right.
So that wasn't the case in the earlier years. So that changed. He took over the custodianship of Agnes, Elizabeth Keene's daughter. So you got to see that aspect of him. But it, of course, always had some involvement with Reddington because he is presumably a grandparent to her,
mm-hmm.
To Agnes, that is. So so I was happy that they found different ways to express that. And I have to say that I don't think they could have predicted or would have. I don't think in the first year of the Blacklist, they drew out a 10-year arc for the show.
Right.
I don't think they would have known this at that time.
Right.
So therefore, that's what I mean by, not giving. So to your point, I look at it as a script by script thing. And
yeah.
I think in law enforcement, in the reality of the job, it's a day by day thing. And in acting, it's a scene by scene thing.
Yeah, exactly.
A line by line thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got to be in the moment. By the way, I take it you're a Bulls fan. You grew up in the Midwest. You're a Bulls fan, right? Chicago Bulls?
Yeah. I root for the Bulls.
I'm a Celtics fan.
I don't know about this squad.
See, there you go. My producer said that you were a front runner when it came to being a sports fan. So I don't believe it. I got to meet Harry, but it turns out you are. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a Celtics fan. Larry Bird's my guy, and I love this comment that Rodman just made that he thinks Larry Bird isn't as talented as Jokic is now, and the whole debate that created. But The Last Dance is a great series. I watched the whole thing, and I agree. Like I miss the days when you had, you're a kid, you had your stars. Like, imagine if Mickey Mantle, I'm a Red Sox fan, but if you're a Yankee fan, imagine Mickey Mantle bouncing around from team to team, right? It's harder to get invested in teams because you're really investing in, just like watching a fan watching a show, you're investing in those relationships and those personalities. And when they come and go, you don't have the same connection. And I think that's the case to draw a parallel to this, to your show, like it's a lot of things go into something running 10 years and it's they're connecting with these characters, which is a tribute to how well you guys are pulling this off.
Yes, I think that's very apropos. The allegiance that we develop over time, but staying on the show, for example, is Larry Bird, who I agree with. By the way, he was listen. I was a Laker fan at that time. Of course, that probably won't surprise you.
I can't even believe I have you on my show. I can't. Wow.
I love them both.
You go. Now you're like straddling the fence. Come on, man. So Magic and Larry.
We knew he was great. We knew that Bird was great.
Oh my God. When Magic hit that hook shot, when Magic hit that hook shot, I remember where I was sitting. I'm like, oh my God. I remember saying to myself, someday I hope I don't interview a really influential, amazing actor who's a fan of the Lakers. I remember said that to myself years ago. And then sure enough, here I am talking to you. And I had admired you and put you on a pedestal. Now I had I got to drop you down a notch, Harry. I got to be honest with you.
I'll make it up to you, buddy.
All right, man. You talked about playing piano, and you say when I'm learning a difficult piece, at some point I have to enjoy the music and of the piece itself. Have confidence that my fingers know where to go. It's the same with acting, and I act too. But that's an interesting take that I hadn't seen before. Explain that a little bit.
I don't remember when I might have said that, but I think when I was actually playing the piano more. Yeah. I'm back at it now. I'm trying to get back into it. But that said, you know, I was taking a group piano class, it's unnerving, you know, if you're not really an accomplished piano player, used to, even if you are, you know, some people, you get jitters if it's not your,
right,
if you're not sure of it, even if you are sure of it. But right. That said, remember the first time I kind of played in front of a public audience, and even in that class, the teachers would always say, listen, you already know the piece. You know what? Just let it go. And I would say that, yeah, just trust that you know it. Trust in yourself. Trust that your muscles right. remember it. And it's the same with acting. I think at some point, you know, as actors get trained in these methods and we take these classes and we want to tightly control what the emotions are and the words and how it's phrased, its execution and all of those things. And it gets held back. It gets tight. It's like a watched pot. They used to say, watched pot of water never boils. So if you're, right. if you're watching yourself,
right.
You know,
right.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, that's what I meant by it. Yeah. I think it does apply to both crafts. Acting is really a craft. People like to think of it as an art. And I guess it can be, but it really is a craft. You can learn to do it. Anybody can learn to do it, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think that there's some, I think you're being modest. I mean, I've seen your work. I'm surprised you're successful because your work's very marginally. So one last thing I want to touch on for a second was that you were raised Catholic. Your dad passed away before you were two. You went to Catholic school and you had these very influential father figures of the cloth, if you will. And maybe toyed with the idea of going into the priesthood, but then ultimately decided not to. Was it because kind of you lived maybe a cloistered life? And I know my brother went to Catholic school and what that can be like. So you lived a kind of a cloistered life growing up, and that you didn't want to continue that way in your adult life. Like that's a big shift, you know, from one career path, if you will, to another. What kind of was going on at the time that fed your decisions?
I think my answer's been consistent over the years. It might have changed because that was 40 years ago when I was making that decision.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to continue through the seminary, but I think it really was, I think it's close to what you said, that I knew what going to all boys schools was like and being studious and serious and committed to service. I knew what that was like. And most of that is because I felt an obligation, to your point, of being, you know, raised by a widowed mother, not having a father figure, except mm-hmm. for the priest. I knew mm-hmm. that was therefore something I had to pay back. That was an important role and an important function. That if I couldn't be a man of the cloth or whatever, then I would try to do that in whatever work I chose. Mm-hmm. But I became fascinated with the idea that you could be somebody else, you know, for a living, and that you could sort of learn yeah. how to do this thing that seemed to me like a magic trick. You know, I remember the first person that got me really interested in it was Marlon Brando, because I saw him play. I was doing the play Guys and Dolls, and so we saw it some snowy afternoon when everybody couldn't get to rehearsal. We just watched the movie that we were going to be doing the play of in high school. Mm-hmm. Brando was in it, Sinatra was in it, all that kind of thing. And then shortly thereafter, I saw him in The Godfather, and I was shocked because that was the same actor.
Oh,
yeah. And that's the same guy?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's getting paid. He's getting paid for that. That's amazing. What? Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
And then he was a Superman, you know, like he was showing up all over the place. Really different.
And then he was, you know, and then he was in, who did with Martin Sheen and why is the Apocalypse Now? Like
Apocalypse Now.
Like a completely transformed physically. Yeah, amazing. Well, listen, it is, you're a great actor in your own right. And what a career. And really honored to have you on. Well, I'm not honored. You're a Laker fan. So anyway, it's been okay having you on. It could have been better. No, I wish you the best of luck. And I want to have you on again sometime.
I would love to come back on. Absolutely.
All right, that was Harry Lennox. Great guy. Great conversation with him. And final season of The Blacklist. Check it out. And my final days on Earth trying to get this gate fence up. So watch for my obituary if this thing doesn't get up the right way soon. And also, you guys can see me doing stand-up this week. I'm going to be actually a lot in July. I'm going to be in New York City. Dates are on my website. I'm going to be at Stand Up New York, West Side Comedy Club, and a couple of other clubs in the city doing sets. So if you're in the city, come on out, check me out. You can go to my website to see dates. And thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody.